Welcome to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I am your host, Isaac Wolf. Joel Embiid dropped 41 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 blocks in a win over the Celtics last night, including a step-back dagger from the corner over a double team with 11 seconds left to put Philly up 4 at that point in the game. The Sixers were down 7 with 3 minutes and 46 seconds left in the fourth, but Embiid willed them to the win, honestly. Just did whatever he could. Scored 17 in the fourth quarter alone. Draymond Green had a 16-point, 11-rebound, 10-assist triple-double against the Kings last night. That is his 31st career triple-double, and the Warriors are 30-1 when he puts up a triple-double. That's a guy who affects winning. DeJounte Murray, shout out to him too for his triple-double last night, 24 points, 12 rebounds, and 13 assists in a win over the Clippers. The trade deadline is about 2 months away, a little less than 2 months away now, and there are plenty of rumors to go around. According to Shams Charania of The Athletic, Ben Simmons is receiving interest from the Lakers, the Knicks, the Blazers, the Pacers, the Timberwolves, the Cavs, and the Sacramento Kings. Now, Ben Simmons with the Lakers, I'm not sure what they would give up for him. I don't think that's happening. The New York Knicks could perhaps package Kemba Walker, send him to Philly to run the point. That would be very interesting because Kemba Walker's talented. But Tom Thibodeau just doesn't like him, I guess. Doesn't want to use him in the rotation. Yeah, his plus-minus is pretty bad. But he had 29 points. He was basically forced to start with the other two point guards out for the Knicks the other night against the Celtics. He dropped 29. I mean, he's still capable of being a starting point guard. So a Simmons for Walker swap would be interesting. Blazers, we've talked about that fit. The Indiana Pacers are an option. We'll talk about them in a little bit. The Minnesota Timberwolves, this has been, you know, a talk for a while, Ben Simmons in Minnesota. But, like, what are you going to give up? When these rumors between Simmons and the Timberwolves first came out, the Timberwolves were like, we don't want to give up Russell, Edwards, or Towns. Okay, what else do you have, Torian Prince? That's not enough. The Cleveland Cavaliers have some enticing young pieces. They could ship Darius Garland out of there. I don't think they'd trade the injured Colin Sexton, but Darius Garland could certainly be part. Isaac Okoro, maybe. And then the Sacramento Kings, who are looking to deal Marvin Bagley and Buddy Hield together for an all-star, according to Jason Anderson of the Sacramento Bee. That could work. A Bagley and Hield package for Ben Simmons, maybe. Jeremy Grant. The Pistons are looking to trade him. I don't know why. He literally became a borderline all-star for no reason at all in Detroit. Like, he was just this energy guy off the bench in Denver, and then all of a sudden he signs with Detroit, averages 22 points a game. He was closer than people want to admit to being an all-star last year. And I'm pretty sure he's averaging around 20 points a game again this year. But I don't know. I guess the Pistons just want to waste another talent. The Portland Trailblazers and the Los Angeles Lakers are interested in him. The Blazers, you could perhaps make a deal with, like, around Norman Powell. And then the Lakers, I mean, trades are lopsided. All trades are lopsided these days in the NBA and in every sport, honestly. NFL's the word. Well, no, actually, MLB is. But anyway, I mean, the Lakers could probably just get away with sending Wayne Ellington and a first-round pick to Detroit, and Detroit would probably take it. I mean, that's just how it goes up there. That Andre Drummond trade was just so stupid. Sorry. But, yeah, Jeremy Grant probably on his way out of Detroit soon. The Celtics are listening to offers for Dennis Schroeder. The Hawks want a minimum of a first-round pick for Cam Reddish. So they at least want a first-round pick if they're going to deal Cam Reddish away. And that makes sense because, I mean, the Hawks are just so, they're just so loaded with young talent. And it's just unfortunate because Reddish hasn't been able to, you know, be in a productive spot. So many people are ahead of him, even though he's got talent. He's showed it before, but I think Reddish needs a new start. I think he needs to go somewhere else. And I think he's a guy who's capable of averaging 20 points per game in the right system when he's in his prime. But Kevin Knox is receiving interest around the league. The teams are calling. the teams are calling the New York Knicks supposedly about him. I don't know why or what's enticing about him, but the trade deadline is February 10th. We'll see how this all these rumors shake out by then. Over 50 players. It's probably around 60 by the time I'm saying this, but over 50 players are in health and safety protocols right now around the league. Five games were postponed. Cavs, Hawks, Nuggets, Nets, Pelicans, Sixers, Magic, Raptors, Wizards, Nets. The NBA honestly should have just taken this week off. Make Christmas Day the return day, because you can't skip Christmas. You really can't. And there was a report from, I believe it was Woj, saying that game times for the Christmas Day games are subject to change as late as December 24th. You know, teams could be aware or made aware that their game time has changed, you know, 12 hours before tip-off, which is pretty pathetic. But it is what it is. I mean, and also, you want stars available. Like, you don't want a Christmas Day where you have, like, the Long Island Nets playing the South Bay Lakers. That's what it would feel like, honestly. LeBron is there. LeBron's still healthy. I think Westbrook's still. But, like, the Nets, they don't have Harden, KD, or Kyrie. Nobody wants to watch that. Nobody wants to watch the Brooklyn Nets without any of those three. So, like, Durant, Harden, Irving are out. Giannis is out. Trey is out. Ja actually just returned. So, I had him on my list, but he just returned last night, I believe. Then Zach LaVine, De'Aaron Fox, Anthony Edwards, who, by the way, became the seventh player with 2,000 or more points in his first 100 career games at age 20 or younger, joining LeBron, Melo, Luka, Melo's in Carmelo. I hate that we have to, like, say that now because LaMelo Ball is actually good. But LeBron, Carmelo Anthony, Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Zion Williamson. Those are the other six who have scored 2,000 or more points in their first 100 career games at age 20 or younger. That's elite company for Anthony Edwards. But the break is needed. We need to get these guys back. So the games aren't entertaining without the big names. I mean, they just aren't. The last week has just been insane. 50 plus, you know, putting protocols. And honestly, I compare this to free agency because it seems like every 2 minutes, Woj drops a new tweet, a new Woj bomb saying, oh, this star's in health and safety protocols. Oh, now this star's in health and safety protocols. It's just like free agency, but it sucks because it means they're not playing. But there's been 70 or more players put in protocols this month alone, while it was just 16 all season before December. And it's just crazy. I think the NBA should have taken Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off. And then Friday, everybody can come back, hopefully clear protocols and play in Christmas Day games. That's what should have happened. But Adam Silver said he doesn't see the logic, I believe is what he said, in pausing the NBA season. But I'm also not complaining with that decision either, because I would hate it if we stopped and then realized, oh, this is helping. And then, well, not that I don't want to help the COVID situation, but like, I don't want no basketball for an extended period of time. So we got to play how we got to play for these next few weeks. We'll get through it. I want to shift our focus to the Indiana Pacers. This is a team we really don't talk about that much, but I want to talk about them today because they are about to rebuild. They should rebuild. Miles Turner wants out. He said, I believe he was responding to trade rumors. I forget if it was a post-game press conference or what, but he said, quote, "It's clear that I'm not valued as more than a glorified role player here. I want something more opportunity." And that's fair. That's fair. Miles Turner is probably the best shot blocker in the NBA right now, but that's all he's used for in Indiana. And he's got a lot of skill on the offensive end. He's able to finish down low. He's got a lot of size, and he's got an outside shot, a mid-range shot as well. So I agree. I'd say maybe get him out of there. I think he's got potential to be, you know, a 15 and 10, two blocks, three blocks per game, four blocks per game even kind of guy. Domantas Sabonis also wants out. According to Matt Moore of the Action Network, he wants a change of scenery. That's fair, because in Indiana is not the most glorious place on earth. But he's playing like an all-star. He's averaging 18, 11, and 4. He often stuffs the stat sheet. He had 16 points, 25 rebounds, and 10 assists against Minnesota earlier this season. He's got 11 triple-doubles over the past 3 seasons with Indiana. His production is just overlooked because he's playing with the Indiana Pacers, who are just really like average, constantly average. It's unfortunate because Domantas Sabonis deserves more recognition for what he's done the past few years. He's gotten the All-Star nods, but like, nobody really cares. The Phoenix Suns and Sacramento Kings are supposedly interested in him. We'll see if those go anywhere. I don't think they will. But the Pacers are also looking to trade Caris LeVert. Many teams have contacted Indiana about him. They are about ready to blow it up, and it makes sense because they've been stuck in this cycle of mediocrity ever since Paul George left. Ever since that trade, I think it was a trade. Yeah, trade PG for, what was it, Sabonis and Oladipo? That turned out to be pretty even. Neither the Thunder nor the Pacers had much playoff success with either of the two. But anyway, they developed those players well. The Pacers did. Sabonis became an all-star. Oladipo became an all-star, both 2 times. Miles Turner is arguably the league's best shot blocker. And then Malcolm Brogdon leads the team in scoring and assists. He's averaging 19.7 points per game and 6.2 assists per game. They have a lot of solid pieces, but it's not enough for contention. They're 13 and 18 right now. They are 13th in the East. When you have little success with these talented players, it is time to move on. It is time to start over. They supposedly want to trade LeVert and then either Turner or Sabonis. It sounds like they don't want to give up both big men, which is fair because they really don't have much behind either of them. I think Goga Batadze is their main backup center. O'Shea Brissett's all right at the 4 to back up Sabonis. But if you keep Brogdon and Sabonis, so say you trade LeVert and Turner, you can load up probably with those two on draft picks and, you know, potential players, you know, young guys who have talent. And, you know, see where you go, see what you get from there. And then if you trade Sabonis, I think you can get a much better, higher, however you want to say it, quality player in return. Because Sabonis is an all-star, LeVert and Turner are not. Ben Simmons, this is where the Pacers come into play here, as I was talking about earlier. His name has been affiliated with the Pacers for a while in trade talks. So perhaps there's a deal there. Simmons, Sabonis. I don't like the Sabonis fit. Maybe. I don't know. Sabonis is more of a playmaker than people realize. So if you stick Embiid on the low block, even though he can play perimeter, you can put Sabonis, who does most of his work at the elbow with handoffs. Maybe that works. But it's going to be hard to build anything in Indiana, honestly, simply due to geography. Like, it's just not a big market. Basketball is big time there. Indiana fans love their Pacers, but their only relevance in the team's history was through the draft. When they drafted Reggie Miller, probably the best player of all time, you know, with the 11th pick in 1987. And then Paul George, who took them to the Eastern Conference Finals multiple times. They took him with the 10th pick in 2010. They don't have a history of attracting big-time free agents. So they got to make a trade or draft a superstar, which obviously is like picking a needle in a haystack. It's not easy, especially when the Pacers aren't at the top of the lottery every year. But it's just how the Pacers have to live being in a small, you know, relatively unattractive market like Indianapolis. We got some big news involving Kyrie Irving when we come back. Do not go anywhere. This is one of the biggest storylines of the NBA all season. Welcome back to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I'm your host, Isaac Wolf. The Brooklyn Nets have decided to bring Kyrie Irving back for games outside of New York. Not all road games, because if they play the Knicks, the vaccination requirement is still in effect. But he is in COVID protocols right now, which is pretty funny because it happened like a day after that announcement. But once he's back, it changes everything. Even though it's only half the games. There's so much to break down with this. I want to talk about the immediate impact first. The chemistry is a question. Obviously, it's going to take a few games. The Big Three only played 8 games together in the regular season before the playoffs, and they were 6-2 in those regular season games. Their last game together was June 13th, Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals, 6 months ago. Their last practice together was somewhere around early October, which was 2 months ago when the Nets decided to, you know, send him home entirely, keep him away from the team entirely. The Big Three is so talented, though, that I don't think the fit or the meshing will be that bad. I expect a few losses like right away, maybe 1 or 2 or maybe even 3 or 4 in the first 10 games. They'll win some, they'll lose some. But one of my main questions is, how will Harden fit? Because his scoring production is at an all-time low already right now, you know, really since becoming a number one option since the trade to Houston. I mean, will Kyrie create more shots for him? Who will play off ball more? Who will run point? What will each of their roles look like in that backcourt? It could be the same as last year when Harden ran point and then Kyrie was more off ball. They made that decision relatively quickly. But with the way things have gone for Harden this season, I think it changes things slightly. KD is still the top dog, number one option. He's going to take the last shot every game. He's going to get his 30 points a game. But how will Harden and Kyrie split production since Harden's scoring is, you know, already down? I think they're going to go back to Harden running point and Kyrie playing off ball. And I think this could actually be good for James Harden. I think this is actually going to be very good for James Harden because he's been struggling without Kyrie this year. He doesn't really know his role without Kyrie this year. He said, I don't know when to score. I don't know when to pass. I don't know when to do a little bit of everything. I think Kyrie coming back is going to bring or give him more clarity as to when to do those things. So I think this will be good for Harden. But again, I'm just questioning it because he's not himself this year. In the regular season, once the chemistry is down, the unavailability for some games will not make much of a difference. Like, it's known when he will play, and the Nets will know how to prepare. Some nights with him, and then some nights without him. In the games with him, they're too talented to lose if all three play. KD may take some nights off because he's been playing some really heavy minutes this season. He's had multiple 48-minute games. And Durant's not concerned about it, but Steve Nash is, and rightfully so. I mean, you're concerned about a guy like that, his durability, and, you know, history with an Achilles injury. You don't want to, or what was it, a calf last year too? You don't want to risk anything with him. But when all three are playing, they really should never lose. Obviously, it's going to happen a couple times because sometimes you just get flat out outplayed for no reason by a random team on a random day. But as far as the duos go, just Harden and Irving were 14-3 last year. When it was just Irving and Durant on the floor, they were only 6-5. So there's still some stuff to figure out with those different combinations. The regular season, though, should be successful, really, no matter who's on the floor, because Durant and Harden can take care, you know, on their home court, even though they're only 10-6 right now. That's because most of their home opponents have been a lot more difficult, a lot of the best teams they've played at home so far this year. They're 21-9 overall. When Kyrie joins on the road, which they're 11-3 this season, it's a whole different game, and it puts the Nets back in, I like to say, should territory, as in they should win the championship if all three are healthy. Which brings me to this. In the playoffs, it gets very, very interesting because right now, the Nets have home court advantage until the NBA Finals because they're number one seed in the East, and then the Suns and the Warriors have better records than them in the West. But every series has 4 games at home and 3 games away for the higher seed. So Kyrie only being available for about half the series adds a very intriguing twist to game planning. And the you know, the hunt, if you want to call it, for the number one seed, overall seed, like the best record in the regular season, because we'll get to the finals in a little bit. But as I said earlier, Kyrie only being available for about half the series is really interesting for game planning, because opposing defenses will have to plan for all three some nights, or, you know, just two the other nights. And obviously game planning for just the other two is still very, very difficult. So the first two rounds shouldn't be much of a struggle. The first round, you can really figure it out. The opponent shouldn't be overlooked, but like, they're not truly a threat. We saw that with the Celtics last season. In the second round, you get your rhythm going, perhaps another showdown with Milwaukee or another Milwaukee type series. I mean, obviously the opponent's going to be higher quality, but barring injuries, it should be a winnable series. In the Eastern Conference Finals, it gets a little tougher. Obviously, it's the best opponent from the conference. You're going to have to bring it, and you're going to have to stay healthy. If Harden or KD goes down and Kyrie can only play half the series, that will make things incredibly difficult and compromised for Brooklyn. KD and Harden are capable of winning on their own, but the lack of consistency could throw them off, or it could put them a step ahead, I guess, because they know how to prepare individually for each game. For instance, if Durant goes down and it's an away game, Harden's like, all right, I know I got to score 50 tonight. I guess KD would probably say the same thing. And then if the one or the other goes down and Kyrie's available, they'll be like, okay, we can, you know, win the game, just the two of us. But in the NBA Finals, this is where it gets difficult. You need your best players available at all times. That won't be the case with the Brooklyn Nets. And it's hard to gauge the finals are right now without knowing the opponent. Obviously, it will be the best team in the West, which the West has a lot to offer, but they could already be at a disadvantage. If the Nets don't get the number one overall seed, they only have Kyrie for three games instead of four. That's huge. Now, obviously, they could win with Kyrie. I think they're the favorites to get to the East, even if Kyrie didn't play. Or get out of the East, I should say, if Kyrie didn't play. But, I mean, it's hard to imagine what that would look like if that's still the case in June. That would be so bizarre to have a player healthy, completely healthy, but only available for away games. That adds such an interesting twist. At the end of the day, this is a business decision that the Nets really had to make with the shortage of rosters, or with the shortage of their roster. And they're going to roll with it. They're going to do what they can to win. And adding a superstar talent like Kyrie Irving is a huge plus, even if it is just half the games. To wrap up today, this day in NBA, well, not really NBA history, but this day in basketball history, 130 years ago to the day, Dr. James Naismith invented the greatest sport of all time. How awesome is that? It is the sport of basketball's 130th anniversary. That's pretty awesome. We'll be back soon with another podcast.